Inside Security Podcast with Martin and Steve Yvette and Little Joe. News Yankee Steve giving weekly updates. Armor guy managing the microphones. Joseph's there in sparkles while the vet's in the airport. Andy Googles Microsoft on his iPhone. A family-friendly bucket full of southern goodness. What will they be ranting about this week?
Hello, and welcome to the Southern Fried Security Podcast. I'm your host for tonight, Joseph Sicoli. Tonight's going to be kind of a short night. We have a great interview that Martin did with Patrick Heim, the head of trust and security at Dropbox. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the interview.
Patrick, thanks for joining us here on the Southern Fried Security Podcast today. Patrick, for folks out there in our audience who may not know you, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Okay. Hey, thank you for having me on. This is Patrick Heim. I'm the head of trust and security at Dropbox. Like to describe myself as a lifelong security guy. I was the chief trust officer at Salesforce.com, so this is my second cloud company. I've also been in the healthcare space. I was the CISO of Kaiser Permanente, as well as the CISO of McKesson Corporation. I've done a couple of security startup companies as well, so I've been on the product side. And prior to that, auditing, consulting, pen testing, hacking, you name it, basically. So I've very much enjoyed being in this industry. And it's what I can say. It's like this has been my life's passion.
So, Patrick, one of the things, you know, as CISOs, and you and I were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, was a lot of CISOs, a lot of CIOs, a lot of mainline IT folks, quote, hate Dropbox, unquote. And as a CISO in a healthcare environment, folks using things like Dropbox or your competitors can be a compliance or a security issue. One of the things that that's really clear to me is, yeah, I could try to block access to these things, but they're going to go around it. So what's been your experience both before you got into the cloud side and now that you're there? How do you see the relationship between IT, the people who want to use these cloud services, and being a cloud service provider? You've got an unusual perspective. How do you see those relationships working out, or what the dynamic of the relationships are?
That's a great question. And I think the thinking has really evolved over the last X number of years. I think in the early days of cloud was kind of scary, and the initial reaction was to block it, and IT could still get away with it. But then if you look at how cloud and consumerization has evolved and how much value people get out of using cloud services and apps, it's a totally different world we live in nowadays. So again, when you think about risk, you have to balance risk, the downside risk, against the actual value that's being generated by some of these technologies. And I'd like to think that most organizations nowadays, the value that's being generated by allowing individuals in the organization to discover and use tools that make them more productive, whether it's mobile apps or cloud services, quite frankly, outweighs the risk. And we can also look into, the underlying questions like, is cloud safer or not safer than your on-prem environment? And I've run large on-prem environments, and it's a really, really tough thing. And I've worked in cloud companies. And by the way, we don't have those legacy issues. I can attract some of the best and brightest folks into the, PhDs in security to work on interesting problems. And so I think there's also a trending realization that economies of scale and sustainability around security, and there are many different elements of security that are actually much stronger with cloud providers than they are if you try to do similar things on-premise. So the shifting of the thinking also goes, it kind of like reevaluating the risk side of things. But the shifting of thinking now is not around CISOs thinking about how do I block all of this stuff, but really how do I discover what is happening and how do I make it safe, selectively make it safe. And you've seen that in the kind of ascend of the CASB or the Cloud Access Security Broker market. There are numerous tools available now that give organizations visibility into how individual employees use cloud, and then they can wrap some policy around it. At Dropbox, we actually think that's super complementary, and we've started in the consumer space, but now have grown to 500 million users globally, and we have more than 150,000 paying businesses. And through that process, at a point we developed Dropbox Business and Dropbox Enterprise. So, you know, this was a recurring thing that we heard, is like, you know, there is the quote-unquote Dropbox problem, and IT managers and security managers were concerned about not having visibility and control. So we decided, it's like, hey, you know, it's like, let's create a product that gives IT managers visibility and control, yet still maintains all of the usability, efficiency, productivity of the consumer side of things. So this has been a very deliberate investment in the company for the last approximately 3 years or so. And now I'm just extraordinarily happy in terms of where we are and the capabilities we have to not only kind of like be the leader in terms of efficiency around file share and sync and other collaboration capabilities, but also that we've created a product suite that is, well, again, in the healthcare space, we'll now sign HIPAA BAAs. Of course, we have all the encryption capabilities in place. And we've built a very well-rounded product that serves the needs of the vast majority of businesses.
So one of the challenges that I can imagine in your space are when you're working on the product side there, is there's this challenge to be the first person out of the gate. And you know, you're in a competitive space. You have some notable competitors. So there's always that tension between we need to get this to market quickly and we need to fully bake in the security compliance and risk controls. What was sort of the biggest challenge from your side in getting that done? And kind of to have you talk about that challenge and what you had to do internally to get the product where it needed to be.
I think we actually pride ourselves on not rushing things. We have a company value called sweat the details. So we're very oriented to doing the right things, very principles driven. And I'll give you an example. So as we, like I mentioned, we transitioned from being a consumer-only company to one that now has business and enterprise products. But one of the challenges was that enterprises say, yeah, I'd love to, you know, buy Dropbox Business, but I have all of these individuals that are currently using Dropbox that I need to convert. Can you tell me their email addresses and names so we can reach out to them? And so it was actually an interesting challenge for us, because for privacy purposes, we're incredibly, focused around maintaining privacy. The answer was like, no, we actually can't tell you, because these were individual agreements we have with these people. Just because they registered an account with your company email address doesn't mean they're actually using it for business. It could be personal use. So, sorry, business users, we can give you aggregate statistics, but we can't tell you anything. So that was kind of a tough challenge. So then we went to the design team and we thought about it. We spent a lot of time designing a conversion process that now, when you sign up for Dropbox Enterprise, you can hit a single checkbox that says, I want to enroll all existing users into the enterprise version. And what we do is we kick off individual workflows for every person where they get a pop-up and a notification that basically says, hey, you know, your company has bought Dropbox. How do you want to handle this? You can choose either to, you know, click on this, which confirms that your existing email account and Dropbox address were being used for work purposes and your company can have access to these now, and we'll help you set up another personal one for your personal use. Or B, basically, it's like, I primarily use this for personal reasons, so we basically say put in a new email address, a personal one, and we'll convert that to your personal, and we'll create an empty one for your business account. And the reason we did that, and there was a lot of design and workflows, it sounds simple now, is because we wanted to make sure that we hit the objectives of our enterprise customers in gaining visibility and control, but we also have to preserve the privacy and the agreements that we have with the individual consumers that are using Dropbox. And this is something where actually building these workflows and testing them and now being able to implement them at massive scale is really a win-win for both sides and has been phenomenally effective. But that's an example of like not rushing to market. You know, this is something that we spent a lot of time on iterating and testing and making sure that philosophically and with our legal team, with everybody else, we're doing the right thing for both parties.
So in this space, your storage as a service, and that's probably not a phrase that you guys might use to describe yourself, but from my end, that's kind of what it is. What are the biggest challenges across that entire market space do you see? And how are you guys positioning yourselves around them?
So I'm going to talk about that in the security context, at least. So from a security perspective, the challenges is that when you're a platform, there are lots of folks that like to abuse the platform. And, you know, quite frankly, from a security perspective, we aren't seeing like really sophisticated, crazy, like O-Day attacks against our code. We have an amazing, you know, application security team. Our infrastructure is very consistent, robust, and very tightly managed. So the threat model has really shifted towards our users. And what we see very consistently are various threat actors around the world. And by the way, we get all of them. With a half a billion users, we have every flavor of, you know, political movement, corporation, industry, you name it, basically, that's a potential target on Dropbox. But what we've seen is a really interesting shift towards attacking our users, but not directly at Dropbox. We've seen that the biggest risk out there to customers in kind of in the cloud industry as a whole, not just Dropbox, is that the fact that people reuse the same passwords across multiple sites. And so when we look at the data around attacks, what is very consistently leading to, you know, the number one cause of actual data loss is that people reuse the passwords across multiple sites. They haven't turned on two-factor authentication. The weakest link, for lack of a better term, an external site gets hacked and the passwords get cracked, and you've seen the dumps, you know, that are sent out there. And then you have very organized criminal organizations that are testing those credentials against all major cloud providers, including Dropbox. So that's actually become one of our investment priorities as a company. And those are the types of things that maybe from a feature perspective you don't see, but we've invested a lot in directly integrating threat intelligence on compromised accounts, being able to identify what are indicators of automation tools and how do we basically block those, and then how do we automate the responses based on the analysis so that we protect our users. And right now, even if somebody has like a valid, stolen valid username and passport, we have enough signal around the attack tools in use and those accounts and potentially being compromised elsewhere that we can actually block 85% of those attacks from gaining access to any Dropbox contents, which is kind of exciting. The other area we've invested in quite heavily is two-factor authentication, and I always want to advocate for individuals and corporations to turn that on. So, you know, we provide that for free to all of our users, but unfortunately we see that even though it's free, only like less than 1% of all of our 500 million users globally actually turn on any kind of two-factor authentication. So I'm huge advocate for that, and even recently we added a new factor, which is if you really like hardware-based authentication, we implemented the U2F protocol, universal two-factor. So if you're a user of YubiKeys, for example, those are natively going to work with Dropbox now. Again, it's like if there's one message to go out to, especially to the security community, but also the non-security community, is don't reuse passwords. Use a password management tool, and wherever possible, turn on 2FA.
So when you said the percentage of folks who have turned on 2FA is under 1%, that's kind of shocking. Why do you think that the take rate on that has been so low?
You know what? It's a great question, and we're going to be doing some studies because we obviously want to increase this. So we're going to be running some experiments in the UI, prompting individuals to go through a security health check to check their settings, turn on 2FA, and whatnot, basically. But I think the general sentiment or the general sense has been that basic training or basic awareness of security issues, even though it's in the news all the time with compromised companies and whatnot, the average consumer doesn't necessarily get it, to be quite honest. They don't. And I wrote an article on Medium, basically, which is called "We're Not Evolved for This." And I'm speculating right now that kind of the human brain has evolved to think about threat and risk in a very physical way. You know, it's like, what's that edge movement that I'm seeing out the side of my eye, and how do I respond to that? And when we think about things like password reuse, even, if we look at the analogy of, well, I have a single key for all of the locks in my house, so why can't I reuse the same password across multiple sites on the internet? It's like, unless we invest brain power in really trying to understand the abstraction of some of the risks on the internet, we're not going to intuitively get it. And I think that's kind of my hypothesis right now, which is that the human mind just isn't wired to think about abstract risks as the reality is basically on the internet. So it does require explicit investment and training, and who knows what opportunity there are for gamification. And I think it also sets the tone that, you know, if that's the reality of the human condition, then large large providers, especially large providers in the cloud space like the Dropboxes and others, you know, we need to step up our game and invest more in understanding those behavioral elements and how, what can we do to, what are the experiments we can do to really drive better results if we make the assumption that fundamentally changing behavior of half a billion people or, you know, billions of people across the world with things that are unintuitive to them, that they're just not going to get it. So how do we compensate using technology, and how do we compensate for kind of just the weaknesses in human behavior?
So one of the things, especially, you know, you would have to be under a rock for the last several months to not see, you know, ransomware has sort of become, I think, the number two security topic after threat intelligence in any of the media outlets that we go to. And, you know, I'm in healthcare in my day job. You've been in healthcare, and it's been a really big issue. I could see Dropbox being a big juicy target, because people are not just storing their their personal stuff. There's corporate stuff that is intended to be shared. It's going to have a lot of value. Are there things that Dropbox is doing to either prevent or mitigate that sort of thing from happening?
So I'm going to flip it to you and basically say it's the opposite. We protect people against ransomware, actually in a pretty massive scale. So the key thing is, like, it's hard to really delete something once it's in Dropbox, meaning you have to be very explicit about it via the, you know, and we maintain version history. So data point here, when you delete something, or let's just assume you encrypt it in place, since that's what kind of ransomware does. Let's assume that your system is compromised, ransomware encrypts all of your files in place. But let's assume that you've actually stored your files, you've redirected your My Documents, your main file stored to Dropbox. We see an encrypted file as a new version of an existing file. In other words, we provide rollback features where you can just kind of go, okay, well, I don't want the new version, I want the old version, I want to roll it back in bulk. So it's actually a really awesome protection mechanism. And since, you know, we synchronize changes in real time, at any point in time, your files in Dropbox are going to be real-time protected. So there's no data loss. So we're kind of the anti-ransomware solution, if you want to think about it that way. And when we look at some of the stats of our support tickets, for people who don't figure this out and that need to escalate to actually having a support ticket, you know, we have, I think it's 350 to 400 a month or so on average, people that we help them restore in bulk all of their data after it's been encrypted by ransomware. So it's kind of a cool way of thinking about it, but people don't think about Dropbox as a backup solution, but in a way it really is, because anything in Dropbox is automatically backed up with full version history.
Okay. That, I had not thought about it that way, so that's very interesting. So in your role at Dropbox, do you have responsibility for sort of, you know, the internal security program as well?
Absolutely.
So I'm really interested, you know, there's this view that cloud providers like Dropbox are full of, and I hate to use the phrase, but there it is, you know, all these, quote, millennials, unquote, and, you know, their devil-may-care attitudes and all. What have been sort of the challenges, and maybe even, you know, what I'm interested in is the successes you've had around implementing a security program internally to Dropbox?
I think so I would say the cultural challenges. It's not just the millennial side of things, but you have a collection of really, really smart people that are not alike your experience probably in having to manage doctors, which is when you swing the security hammer, it shouldn't be a hammer. It needs to be, we're doing this for the following logical reasons, not just because we can. And you have to justify it, and it has to make sense. So there are some things, as long as you can make them transparent, you have all the room in the world and immense resources to do it. So I'll give an example. We've implemented 802.1x authentication for all network devices using certificates, but the way we've implemented it is completely transparent, but so it doesn't affect our end user population or the cultural side of things. So that's one incredibly great win that we have. And that is really kind of cool, because it's a bit of a mitigating control over some of the other authentication, I guess, controls we have to implement. So if we look at some common accepted wisdom around like frequent password changes all the time. We don't actually enforce that on our employees because we know that's disruptive to the way they do work. So instead of doing that, we've made investments to basically try to move as many things as possible to two-factor authentication as a requirement, centralize their authentication to make it easy for them. Leverage, like I mentioned, 802.1x for the network-based authentication, and not, so we basically consciously try to unburden the security from where it doesn't really matter from a risk perspective, or create other compensating controls where there is a, kind of a perceived burden. Does that make sense?
It does. So one of the challenges that I'm seeing in where I'm at is, And I'm interested in how it plays out in your world. Security awareness education, I think there's the old school model of you throw some PowerPoint slides at somebody, you ask them three or four questions, and you wipe your hands and say done for the year. I'd be interested in knowing because a security failure at Dropbox has the potential to impact hundreds of millions of people.
Right.
I'm assuming there's an awareness and education program. How are you approaching that, and what sort of channels are you using to talk to this really smart, really independently minded employee group that you have there?
So I've done a number of experiments also prior to coming to Dropbox here, because this has been a passionate area of mine. But back to that philosophizing around human behavior and the limits. And I'm not a big fan of training, because when I look at, everybody does computer-based training and a new hire training, it's a compliance thing. But ask yourself, have we actually measured how effective this training is in terms of changing behavior? And I would argue that most of the traditional training methods, if you actually go to measure the behavior, are not going to be very effective. So I've changed the name of the function at Dropbox to be not security training or security awareness, called security engagement, which is like, let's engage the employees and figure out what are the things that really lead to meaningful changes in behavior. And then we start with what are the behaviors that we want to measure? What are the experiments that we can run to try to impact that measurement? And then we run some experiments with subset, control groups as well, and see if we can have meaningful changes. And in the past, when I did this, we saw that certain things such as simulation-based training, where you implemented almost like a board game, and we asked employees to take the role of attacker and now think about building a scenario about how you would actually break into the company and what you would do. When you engage them in that manner to actually have them think, all of a sudden, when we then tested their resistance to phishing attacks and other things, we saw dramatic changes over individuals, positive changes over individuals who may have just gone through a static CBT session where they're half asleep and just trying. Everybody's waiting. What's the next millisecond before the next button, clears up so I can get through to the next page? So it's. I think that's kind of the new frontier, and there is a real opportunity here to apply behavioral science to this. But I'm very skeptical on more of the traditional training approaches. I just don't see much data that they work.
I agree with you. I mean, philosophically, I agree with you. Unfortunately, I think, and you've been there. There are. Compliance regimes that it's really hard to get credit for some of the newer methodologies to deliver that ability to create behavior change.
I view the newer methodologies, that experimentation, it's an additive. Okay, so it doesn't replace the training. I think it's reasonable to basically say that, there's this creative exercise where we're engaging you to think and to be more sharpened and aware and everything else. And then there is basic knowledge, which it just has to be delivered and signed off on. So I'm not invalidating the compliance approach. I think that still needs to be there. There is a good rational reason to have that. But I would say minimize the focus, knowing that it's not super effective. Keep it as a compliance approach. I mean, compliance and security are not the same thing. And then focus on the security behaviors using the more creative and innovative engagement exercises.
Well, Patrick, thank you very much for your time. If there's folks out there who would like to engage with you otherwise, how could people reach out to you?
How can people reach out to me? Well, my pop me a line on LinkedIn. So or can try to connect to me on LinkedIn. That's like my brain augmentation device for maintaining relationships with individuals. And I'm happy to reach out to them and see if I can help them.
Patrick, thanks very much for taking your time to talk to us today.
Awesome. Have a great day. Thank you.